Welcome to Emerging Experts. In this episode, we are joined by Minos Economides to discuss some of the latest challenges and opportunities for renal cell carcinoma treatment. Thank you so much for joining us. To start, would you mind introducing yourself to our audience?
Yes, I'm very happy to speaking to you here today with Targeted Oncology. I knew attending, focusing on RCC, and I'm very excited to share my story on how I got here.
That's excellent. Thank you so much for that. And I guess to start, just what drew you in to specialize in GU cancers, particularly RCC?
Absolutely. So let me back up a little bit and tell you what drew me to oncology first. I'm originally from Greece. I did my medical school in Athens, Greece. And in my second year of medical school, unfortunately, one of my very close friends was diagnosed with cancer. See, in Greece at that time, it was still a taboo to have cancer. So she had to deal with a lot of difficulties when it was obvious that she was having side effects of the chemotherapy. But the way she handled this journey was very courageous and something that I really admired. She was able to create her own podcast and she appeared on many TV shows. And basically the whole concept was that patients with cancer basically should be treated as every other person with a chronic disease. This is a long journey and they shouldn't be looked at differently. That really, really inspired me to try and help patients like my friend, and that drew me to oncology. And then that led me to, immediately after medical school, I went to MD Anderson, where I did research for 2 years. And then I did my internal medicine residency there, and I was very lucky to work with the GU group there and Dr. Nizar Tamir. And he really cultivated the interest in the RCC space. And that's where I focused most of my efforts in my fellowship, which I did at NYU. And this is where I focus my efforts now as a junior attending.
Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. And it's very, very interesting. Would you be able to discuss some of the differences between oncology research in Greece and that in the United States?
Yeah, I would say that most of my research has been done in the United States. I would say that obviously I've been lucky enough to work at big institutions like MD Anderson and NYU in the United States, where there is, an organized fashion into how you deal with research, and that comes from retrospective to prospective data. And I think an important aspect is the ability to have dedicated personnel who are there to support you, from research coordinators to statisticians, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's a huge help, and that's why there's a much larger research output from the US.
Definitely. And what did your career path to becoming an oncologist at NYU look like?
I was very lucky when I was making the decision on when to do my fellowship in oncology. I had a few options, but me and my wife have a lot of family in New Jersey, and we really wanted to move to New York. And I'm very glad with my decision to join NYU. I believe that it's one of the best programs. Obviously, I'm biased, but we have the ability to have clinical experience in three different settings, in a community, in a hospital that serves underserved population, which is Bellevue, one of the first hospitals in the US. At the same time, you have experience at a large cancer center and at a private hospital. So you get the best of all worlds. You get great research opportunities, and at the same time, great clinical experience. What I really valued was the autonomy we get at our Bellevue Hospital, and I think this really helps you become an independent oncologist early on during your fellowship.
That's wonderful. Thank you for that. And what would you say are some of the biggest challenges or rewards that you've encountered on your journey thus far?
Challenges, I would say, by far has been the dealing with complicated patient cases. It's always a struggle when you have to tell a patient that unfortunately you're running out of treatment options for them and that it looks like the end of the road is coming. I think this is something that I still struggle with too. And these are the hardest conversations, I think, in general, in oncology. And on the other hand, this can also be the most rewarding. I think the relationship between an oncologist and their patients is different than other specialists and other patients. There is much more close relationship, and it can be very, very rewarding when you feel like you've really done your best and you've really helped the patient that you're dealing with.
Wonderful. And there have been a lot of exciting developments in the field so far. So, what would you say are some of the most recent and new advances in the GU space that you're excited to apply to your practice?
Absolutely. There's been many, many amazing advances from prostate cancer to kidney cancer to bladder cancer. And I think this is a very exciting time, and this is a big reason why I chose GU. There's a lot of active research going on with new agents. So starting with prostate cancer, I think everyone is very excited with the incorporation of radioligand therapy and specifically Pluvicto and other agents where we see that they're being used in the earlier setting. I think there is a lot of research to be done, but I think this is a very exciting. For bladder cancer, obviously, we recently had the release of information of and form of Vedotin and pembrolizumab in the first line setting, which was groundbreaking, first time in many decades that we have an improved overall survival compared to chemotherapy in the first line setting. So antibody drug conjugates in general in bladder cancer have a huge role, and there's still a lot of area of research to see how we can further improve their outcomes and potentially even lead to a functional cure for our states for patients. And I think there's a lot of research maybe with incorporating different indices like enfortumab and sacituzumab, and I'm excited about this data moving forward. And finally, for RCC, there is a lot of work to be done. We've had several treatments that have been approved in the first line setting, and I think we have some great options. But unfortunately, what to do once the patients progress, and most of them will progress on the first line treatment, what to do is not clear cut. And I think there's a lot of work to be done in that space. We have belzutifan, which recently got an FDA approval, and there's a lot of trials evaluating belzutifan in the earlier line setting as well. So I'm excited to see this data, as I'm also excited to see data of other radiopharmaceuticals like incorporating CA9 inhibitors, including zirinotecan in this space. I think this is all, it's a very exciting time for our field.
It definitely is an exciting time. And I know you have an interest in researching more about second-line treatments in RCC. Would you discuss what specifically intrigues you about this space and what research is still needed?
Yes, absolutely. I think this is my main focus of my research. And it's mainly because there's no clear standard of care at this time. And what usually happens is there is a lot of physician preference on the second line treatment that will be used. It mainly depends on what type of first line therapy the patients received, and they will likely receive a different TKI. And most of the data we have now, it's for a single agent TKI use. We recently had the CONTACT-03 trial, which showed that resuming immunotherapy after a patient has progressed in immunotherapy is not effective at all and actually can lead to more side effects. So there is no role at this time of continuing immunotherapy. But at the same time, in the second line setting, our response rates are up to 30 to 40%, and all patients invariably progress. So we do not have very good treatment options. And trying to find rational combinations of the existing drugs or new drugs that will move the needle is something that we should absolutely strive to get to. And there's different ways to do that. We have some trials planned here at NYU, and I'm very looking forward to finding different pathways that will lead to long-term remissions for these patients.
Wonderful. And off of that, how do you feel the field will continue to evolve in the next 5 to 10 years?
With the pace of all the approvals that we've seen, I think in 5 to 10 years, we'll have a completely different field than the one we're having now. I see a lot of incorporation of antibody drug conjugates and radiopharmaceuticals in the earlier line settings. And this is across all GU cancers, I believe. And I think that these will be the main advancements. Antibody drug conjugates and radiopharmaceuticals will have a clear role in the earlier line setting.
Definitely. And you touched upon it, but what are some of the unmet needs that still exist in the space?
Unmet needs will be so for kidney cancer, I think how to deal with patients who progress on first line therapy is paramount. Also, I think an important question is trying to find out biomarkers for response to specific therapies. So which are the patients in the first line who we should consider for a combination immunotherapy because they are the most likely to benefit from a long-term remission? And who are the patients who would benefit from a TKI? And there's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of work being done currently with several clinical trials trying to guide therapy based on molecular subgroups, and I think that's very, very important work. And in other disease spaces, in bladder cancer, there's still these patients still have a very poor prognosis, despite the advancement that we saw with enfortumab and pembrolizumab. I think there's still a long way to go because these patients still have a poor prognosis, and there are ways that we can improve outcomes for these patients, and I think we'll see these results there. We'll see these results in the near future.
Thank you for that. And would you be able to discuss a challenging case that you have been faced with in your practice? And how did you approach treatment?
Yep, absolutely. I think one of the most challenging cases I had was speaks exactly to my area of research. I had a senior patient. He was 72 years old with clear cell RCC who had metastatic disease and had poor risk features at presentation in 2021 and had the standard first line therapy with IO TKI and unfortunately progressed after 1 year. And at progression, he was switched from one TKI to another, but unfortunately, his disease was progressing rapidly. When looking at what options we had when I was seeing him, these were very, very limited. And I tried using belzutifan, which was just approved the week that I saw him. I used it, but unfortunately, he did not respond. And it was to my surprise that I found that we have very, very few options for these patients. And when looking to New York City and looking across the US for clinical trials that would be available for him, none of them he would really be a candidate. So I really felt sad that I didn't have anything else to offer him. Unfortunately, he passed away a few weeks later. And to that end, I think there's a lot of work to be done. And something that I failed to mention, and I think it's very promising with RCC in particular, is the incorporation of CAR T therapies. And there is a lot of CAR Ts are being produced, and I think they have a potential role. So I think these clinical trials will be very exciting to see if they work in the refractory space.
Thank you for sharing that case with us. And kind of off of that, how do you personalize treatments for your patients?
So I would say for my RCC patients, I always try, for my metastatic RCC patients, I always try to give combination immunotherapy unless there are contraindications. What are these contraindications? If a patient obviously has autoimmune condition, I will avoid this. And if a patient has a rapidly progressive symptomatic disease where we want a faster response, this is the patient who are try to use an IO TKI combination. Now, as to what IO TKI combination to use, I think there's a lot of debate and a lot of physician preference. I've used all of them, and I think there's a rationale to use its different combination based on the half-life and the side effects of the different TKIs. But that is my main that is my main the main way I think about this. And especially if a patient has a sarcomatoid differentiation on their histology, this is the patient where I really, really try to give them an immunotherapy combination because the response rates and the long-term outcomes for these patients are very, very good with IO. So I really try to give combination immunotherapy when I can.
What are some of the ethical considerations or challenges you face in your daily practice?
I think a lot of times we reach a point where even though we know that there is no good evidence to support a treatment that we offer in the fourth, fifth, sixth line space, we have a frank discussion with the patient and they still want to pursue therapy. I think this is a very, very difficult decision. And a lot of times in our practice, I think we offer therapy with the understanding that it's sort of a Hail Mary, but it's the least we can do for our patients who are still desperate to have that 1% chance that they will respond. I think this is a very important ethical consideration when we're talking to patients, but I think it's something that is appropriate for our physician for us as physicians to discuss and have an honest conversation with our patients.
Got it. And what would you say are some of the challenges and opportunities that exist for young researchers who want to make their voices heard?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and this is something that I'm working on too. I think being involved, attending the big meetings, I think is important. Trying to network with important people in the field. And I think as far as writing, there's a lot of opportunities from reviews to retrospective studies that I think should be in the mind of every junior investigator. I think especially writing a review with someone who is important in the field can go a long way. And that's something that is fairly straightforward to do. This gives you the opportunity to read a lot about your field and become very, very familiar with your field along with publishing and networking. So I think these are great opportunities.
What advice do you have for fellows and other early researchers in oncology?
I think my advice for fellows in general is to do something that really interests them. I think we are in a system where a lot of people feel pressured to do some things that are not really a good fit for them, but you really need to find out what makes you happy, whatever that may be. It can be from academia to private practice to working with industry, but whatever you do, just make sure that it's a good fit and you'll be happy going to work every day. And I think that's the most important thing.
Thank you so much for all of your insights. Is there anything else that you would like to add before we conclude our conversation?
I think this is a great initiative, and I'm very happy that Targeted Oncology is pursuing this to showcase young investigators. And I think it's a great way for us to connect and for young investigators to connect among each other. So I think it's a very important networking opportunity that has a lot of potential.
For more updates on the latest news and trends in oncology, be sure to visit www.targetedonc.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. You can also find us across social media platforms. Follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Targeted Onc, and on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, and LinkedIn at Targeted Oncology. See you next time!